Good evening. It's 6 o'clock on Thursday, November 17th, and it's time for the Kill Radio News. I should warn you, pretty tired today. I cannot be held accountable for the level of interest I take in the news today. But let's get to the things that really matter. Iraq body count for today from iraqbodycount.net. Minimum civilians reported killed by military intervention in Iraq, 26,982. Maximum, 30,380. Here's a media file from truthout.org for you. Hope you enjoy it. Hope it works.
I'll let it go. If it quits again, we're backing out.
This is Chris Hume with Truth Out. This is Veterans Day weekend. We're here at Arlington West on Santa Monica Beach, and I'm here with Ron Kovic. Ron, tell me, how do you compare the peace movement to the Vietnam War, to the peace movement now?
There are a lot of similarities. I think we're moving much more rapidly now than we were during the Vietnam years. But I do sense something very similar happening, especially in the last 2 or 3 months. I think we've reached a tipping point, and we've reached a crucial turning point in that movement.
You would lift up the coffin when you do a demonstration. If you could lift your coffin up, please.
The whole consensus there with the soldiers was no one really truly believed in the cause, but it was a matter of survival, and, you know, it's either kill or be killed. So that's basically what our job came down to, you know, for our own private safety.
So we're about to begin. Thank you.
I'll have to keep from trying to believe what I see.
Well, I was over there before the war officially started. I was with the Air Force over there August through October of 2002. And come September, the bombing intensified over Iraq by about 500%. And this was all while Bush was back here saying we're going to try diplomacy first. So I saw the lies firsthand. And at that point, I became against the war.
Tell me about why you're here.
Well, I'm here today to honor the veterans and to honor those who did not come home, whose lives were taken from us prematurely. My son being one of those.
My son died together with 13 of his fellow soldiers when they allowed a suicide bomber to come and sit in his mess tent with him. They thought they were having lunch, but a suicide bomber in a military base in a war zone. Why?
The great majority of this country knows that something is terribly wrong. Americans are asking now, how many more Americans have to die in this war? How many more young men and women have to come home maimed and wounded and psychologically damaged? How many mothers and fathers have to grieve? How many more marches like this must we have with mothers and fathers holding up pictures of their sons and daughters who have died in this senseless war?
The days that the U.S. Army was entering Baghdad, they were shooting literally at everything that came on their way, and we saw the results in the hospital. Plenty of civil cars that came with dead and bloody people. So, I mean, people under blood. So we had at a certain moment two young people who we could not, and I mean we, the Iraqi colleagues, I mean, could not treat them over there. So they were shifted in a hospital while 5 minutes in an ambulance to another hospital. 5 minutes later, I saw the ambulance coming back. I was the first one to enter in that damaged ambulance. It was shot, and the two people inside had fresh new bullet holes. The blood was gurgling out of their wounds, and one died 2 minutes later in my arms. Really, I felt powerless. I felt anger. And then later, when I came out there with a white shirt and with my hands up like this, shouting, "I'm a medical doctor," to the American soldiers on a tank, walking like this, because they should see that I'm a white guy, that they would not shoot us to the others. When I was at 10 meters from the ambulance, I said to them, "Are you guys crazy? You shoot the ambulance." The guy on the tank was not even trying to deny it. He said, "Well, man, it might have been full of explosives." Apparently, he was doing a preemptive attack on an ambulance, as President Bush was doing on Iraq.
It's just so frustrating to hear the Commander-in-Chief stand up there and accuse Americans of being being unpatriotic, of aiding and abetting the enemy, because we challenge what's being done. To me, that just smacks of McCarthyism just right back to the get-go. You just take out the word terrorist, put in the word communist, and we're living through McCarthyism all over again.
Do you think that the media, which had such a part to play in getting this war started, has shifted its approach and its allegiance to the regime?
I think they, first of all, I think the media did a great disservice to the American public at the beginning of this war, and we welcome them aboard now. We're grateful that they're beginning, they seem to be finding the courage within themselves also.
Do you have anything to say to the public out there who still has feelings of support for this war, the diminishing?
Listen to the troops. You're getting a lot of propaganda and a lot of spin from the administration and even a lot of the mainstream media. But we're the ones that have been there firsthand, and more our voices are getting out there. It's important to realize that the best way to end the occupation is to bring the troops home.
We are all in this together. Whether you support this war or oppose this war, we're all American citizens. We all care deeply about this country. I gave 3/4 of my body in Vietnam. Some of the mothers and fathers who marched today lost their sons and daughters only a few months ago in this war. We ask you to listen carefully to your hearts, to realize, to understand that the direction this president is leading us in may be wrong. We know it's wrong. This policy can only hurt America, cannot help America, can only make us greater targets of terror, can only make us more despised throughout the world. I think what's really happening in this country right now is quite amazing. I think there's a real strong shift, and even those who are desperately still trying to support this war, and they're in the minority now, they're beginning to really doubt and question. And there is nothing more important right now than questioning authority. And when the President of the United States on Veterans Day yesterday tells us that by speaking out and opposing this war and by challenging how we got into this war is in some way hurting the troops, then why were the troops marching with us today? Why were the mothers and fathers of those troops who died in that war marching with us today? And why are more and more veterans who are coming back from Iraq turning against this war? And I think that we need to challenge the president, not be intimidated. He's certainly not a king. You have a right, and don't be intimidated. Don't be frightened away. And if you sense that this war is wrong, then have the courage to raise your voice and to speak out, and don't be afraid.
Thank you, Ron. Thank you very much.
All right!
Yeah.
Hey, you know, just because you're right and you know the truth doesn't mean you have to tell anyone, dude. So what was that? That was a Arlington West Veterans Speak Out, a film by Chris Hume and Scott Galindez. It was done on November 14th, and you can download that from truthout.org/multimedia. truthout.org. I will have a phone interview later in the hour. Ian Kleinfeld, the webmaster and genius behind www.democracymeansyou.com, will call in and we'll have a little chat about all sorts of good stuff, like the meaning of is. In the meantime, it's time for headlines. Hawkish Democrat calls for Iraq pullout. Sounds so dirty. Every time I see hawkish Democrat, I always think of Zell Miller, that crazy guy. Well, let's see what this guy has to say. This is from the AP today. One of Congress' most hawkish Democrats called Thursday for an immediate U.S. withdrawal from Iraq. sparking bitter and personal salvos from both sides in a growing Capitol Hill uproar over President Bush's war policies. "It's time to bring them home," said Representative John Murtha, a decorated Korean War and Vietnam combat veteran, choking back tears during remarks to reporters. "Our military has accomplished its mission and done its duty." The comments by the Pennsylvania lawmaker, who has spent 3 decades in the House, hold particular weight because he is close to many military commanders and has enormous credibility with his colleagues on defense issues. He voted for the war in 2002 and remains the top Democrat on the House Appropriations Defense Subcommittee. "Our troops have become the primary target of the insurgency. They are united against U.S. forces, and we have become a catalyst for violence," he said. In a biting response, Republicans criticized Murtha's position as one of abandonment and surrender, and accused Democrats of, get this, of playing politics with the war. It's not funny. Of playing politics with the war and recklessly pushing a cut-and-run strategy. "They want us to retreat. They want us to wave the white flag of surrender to the terrorists of the world," said House Speaker Dennis Hastert, crazy person from Illinois. "It would be an absolute mistake and a real insult to the lives that have been lost," said Representative David Dreyer, crazy person from California. It's interesting how none of these people have, you know, like relatives who are out there right now. Pretty easy for them to say. Just 2 days earlier, the GOP-controlled Senate defeated a Democratic push to force Bush to lay out a timetable for withdrawal. Spotlighting mushrooming questions from both parties about the war, though, the chamber approved a statement that 2006 should be a significant year in which conditions are created for the phased withdrawal of U.S. forces. How vague is that? They approved a statement that 2006 should be an entire year in which many things could happen related to things that were in the statement. Murtha estimated that all U.S. troops could be... Wow, it sure is noisy in L.A. today. Well, Murtha estimated that all U.S. troops could be pulled out within 6 months. He introduced a resolution Thursday that would force the president to call back the military, but it was unclear when, or if, either GOP-run chamber of Congress would vote on it. Kill Radio. Hey, what's up? Hey, Nick, can I put you on the air? Cool.
I have Nick on the line.
Hey.
There we go. I have Nick on the line. How you doing?
I'm good.
You're good. Doing a little. We're doing a little research project together about the future of Kill Radio, right? Or the present of Kill Radio.
Yeah, we are. Absolutely. And today I interviewed one of our DJs, Messy Stench from Craptabulous.
Yeah, she's great. She comes on right after me on Thursday mornings, after Is Good.
Yeah, she's a whole, you know, world unto herself.
Sweet. So, great. So what we'll do is we'll get, was there anything you want to just tell me real quick about our show while I have you on the line? And then you can email me what you recorded and, you know, I'll put it on a new show next time I do a new show.
Oh, she had, I mean, for people who don't know her show or what she looks like, maybe we could describe her.
Yeah, she's quite a character, huh?
Yeah, she's like a character, man. She's like a total experience.
Yeah, she's got this great hair and this unique style of dress, and she fits the DJ Messy, even her show name Craptabulous. It sort of fits with her personality. She's very blunt and straightforward and honest.
Yeah, if I email it to you, if you have any room on your show, you could play it like. You know, you could just get it off the email right now.
I will try. I'm actually doing an interview with the guy who runs the site, democracymeansyou.com. He's going to call in about 15 minutes or so. But I don't know how long that's going to go. So if there's time, definitely email it to me. Do you need my address?
No, I got it. Is it the one on the list?
Yeah.
John Hirschfeld?
Yeah, at SBC.
Yeah, and she had Guar on her, a guy from Guar. You know Guar?
Yeah, totally.
She had a guy from Guar on her show.
Oh, cool, Moon. Well, hey, thanks for doing that. That's something we want to do more of at Kill Radio, is let our listeners know about other shows they might not be listening to.
Right, and she thinks that we should, at our next benefit, or at a benefit, we should have Kill Radio, like, talent. Like, we should have everybody who's in a band or does anything.
Absolutely, yeah.
Perform for the thing.
Well, Umberto from Consent was talking about that the other night, about how we should put together a benefit and we'll use Kill Radio talent to draw people in. And, you know, everybody at Kill Radio is either DJ or writer or musician of some kind, so.
Yeah.
Plenty of large pool of talent.
So, I'm listening to the radio.
I know, I could hear my voice in the background. That's cool. Okay. All right, well, thanks
good,
so much. Go ahead and send that to me, and I'll try to play it today, and if not, my next news show is December 1st, so I'll definitely get it on then.
Okay, and the news is sounding good.
All right, thanks, man. Take care.
Yeah. Okay, bye.
Well, that was nice of Nick to call. It's going to be a good day. It's going to be a good news day. Looking forward to the rest of the hour here. So where were we? We were talking about, these hawkish Democrats calling for a pullout from Iraq. Finally. House Minority Leader Nancy Pelosi, Democrat from California, stopped short of endorsing Murtha's position, even though he's one of her close advisors. Her counterpart in the Senate, Senator Harry Reid of Nevada, said, "I favor what the Senate did," referring to the statement the Senate adopted. The statement that previously I was discussing as being incredibly vague about something that might or might not happen in 2006. Thursday's rhetorical dueling came in a week that had already seen Bush and other top administration officials lash out at war critics, who they say advocate a strategy that will only embolden the insurgency. This is why we used to have actual dueling in our government. Now that it's all rhetorical dueling, nothing ever gets done. Some Senate Democrats have already laid out plans for bringing home U.S. troops. Other House Democrats have called for the military to pull out, but none has Murtha's clout on military issues. Wow, and then I almost just started reading the end of the wrong article. Let's see. Patriot Act. Oh, no, that is the end. Is that the end? Putin. Wow, this is awkward. Take a look at my notes here. Good. Completely out of order. Excellent. Ah, there we go. Hawkish Democrats. Very good. Seldom overtly political, Murtha uncharacteristically responded to Vice President Dickhead Cheney's comments this week that Democrats were spouting one of the most dishonest and reprehensible charges about the Bush administration's use of intelligence before the war. Murtha said, "I like guys who've never been there that criticize us who've been there. I like that. I like guys who got 5 deferments and never been there, send people to war, and then don't like to hear suggestions about what needs to be done." Referring to Bush, Murtha added, "I resent the fact, on Veterans Day, he criticized Democrats for criticizing them." And, I want to comment on this because I've seen this happen a lot. The president, every chance he gets, he talks about Democrats, and it's okay to talk about your opposition. It doesn't bother me. But I've seen him give some major speeches in which he refers to the Democratic Party as the party of obstructionism and wishy-washiness and all sorts of ridiculous claims. And it's okay, you don't have to like Democrats, but sometimes I'm sitting there and I start to feel really patriotic, and I think, wait a minute, that's my president. And he's talking about, almost half, of my government. He's up there shit-talking about half of the U.S. government, like it's a good thing. Half of your government are a bunch of do-nothing fuckwads. And I'm your president, and I'm good. I don't know. It doesn't seem very presidential to me, but whatever. Moving on. Murtha once worked closely with the vice president when Cheney was defense secretary. During Vietnam, Bush served stateside in the National Guard, while Cheney's 5 deferments kept him out of the service entirely. Thank you, Bush, for protecting Texas from the Vietnamese. With a Bronze Star and two Purple Hearts, Murtha retired from the Marine Corps Reserves as a colonel in 1990 after 37 years as a Marine, only a few years longer than he's been in Congress. Elected in 1974, Murtha has become known as an authority on national security whose advice was sought out by Republican and Democratic administrations alike. Murtha's shift from an early war backer to a critic advocating withdrawal reflects plummeting public support for a war that has cost more than $200 billion and led to the deaths of more than 2,000 U.S. troops. Known as a friend and champion of officers at the Pentagon and in the war zone, it is widely believed in Congress that Murtha often speaks for those in uniform and could be echoing what U.S. commanders in the field and in the Pentagon are saying privately about the conflict. It's interesting how this article goes so well with the media file that we were playing before, where the veterans were speaking out against the war. Murtha, who normally shuns the spotlight, said he spoke out because he has grown increasingly troubled by the war and has a constitutional and moral obligation to speak for the troops. But Republicans said Murtha does not represent the views of U.S. troops or military leaders. This fall off of support among Democratic ranks is not shared by the war-fighting forces, not shared by our troops, said Representative Duncan Hunter, Republican from California, chairman of the House Armed Services Committee. Several times a year, Murtha travels to Iraq to assess the war on the ground, and then he often visits wounded troops and hospitals at home, and he sometimes just calls up generals to get first-hand accounts. The war in Iraq is not going as advertised, Murtha said. It is a flawed policy wrapped in illusion. His voice cracked and tears filled his eyes as he related stories of one of his visits to wounded soldiers at Walter Reed Army Medical Center in Washington. One man, he said, was blinded and lost both his hands, but had been denied a Purple Heart because friendly fire caused his injuries. I met with the commandant. I said, if you don't give him a Purple Heart, I'll give him one of mine. And they gave him a Purple Heart, said Murtha, who has two. Anybody out there with Purple Hearts? Anyone? Anyone? Fresh out of Purple Hearts myself. Ooh. See, as usual, I come to the Kill Radio News with a lot of the news that doesn't matter stuff. That one mattered. I have an article here about some psycho mom that made her kid stand on the street with a sign saying she's a bad student. And of course, everybody's favorite ugly person, Heidi Fleiss, is going to be taking over some Nevada brothel. Let's do something. Let's do a little more politics, though. Let's see. Putin or Patriot Act? How about the Patriot Act? Why not? Senators threaten to hold up Patriot Act. Also from the AP. Legislation reauthorizing the Patriot Act stalled Thursday, that's today, as lawmakers worked to satisfy senators upset by the elimination of some civil liberties protections. Negotiators had worked for days to develop an acceptable compromise and presented a draft to senators and representatives late Wednesday. But senators on the negotiating committee have yet to agree to the compromise, aware that six Republicans and Democrats are threatening to block the final version of the bill when it comes to the full Senate. If further changes are not made, we will work to stop this bill from becoming law, the six wrote the Senate Judiciary and Intelligence Committees. The senators are Republicans Larry Craig of Idaho, that's the potato state, John Sununu of New Hampshire, and Lisa Murkowski of Alaska, and Democrats Dick Durbin of Illinois, Russ Feingold of Wisconsin, and Ken Salazar of Colorado. Congress is facing two deadlines. Lawmakers want to leave before week's end for Thanksgiving, because, hey, you know, everybody wants to leave for Thanksgiving. And many parts of the Patriot Act are to expire by year's end if Congress does not renew them. The Republican-controlled House, have you noticed this a lot in the news? Like, they keep, you know, saying the Republican-controlled House instead of the House. It's bringing me down, man. Can't they just say the House? I know it's controlled by the Republicans. I know! The Republican-controlled House hoped to approve the compromise on Friday. Senate Majority Leader and crazy person Bill Frist, Republican from Tennessee, told senators on Thursday that they will have to address the legislation, quote-unquote, before we leave, adding, I want turkey at my Thanksgiving dinner. Turkey's good. But Feingold, Democrat from Wisconsin, the only senator to vote against the original Patriot Act in 2001, said there are several different delaying tactics available to stop the bill in the Senate. Feingold said he had cleared his schedule through Thanksgiving. And this time, I don't think I'll be alone, he said. Added Murkowski, we have worked too long and too hard to allow this conference report to eliminate the modest protections for civil liberties that were agreed to unanimously in the Senate. The six senators were the sponsors of legislation this year that would have tempered the powers of the post-September 11th law that expanded the government's surveillance and prosecutorial powers to annoy us all. They complained that the House-Senate compromise would take back some civil liberty protections on which senators had agreed. They include changing a Senate requirement that the government inform targets of a sneak and peek search warrant within 7 days to 30 days. Such warrants allow police to conduct secret searches of people's homes or businesses and inform them later. Thankfully, Kill Radio is neither a home nor a business. The compromise also removed the Senate proposal that would have mandated judicial reviews when authorities used the law to search financial, medical, library, school, and other records, according to the six senators. The chairman of the Senate Judiciary Committee, GOP Senator Arlen Specter of Pennsylvania, said he was working to address some of the complaints. The tentative compromise would make permanent most parts of the Patriot Act. Permanent. It would set 7-year limits on rules on wiretapping, obtaining business records under the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act, and standards for monitoring quote-unquote lone wolf terrorists who may be operating independent of a foreign agent or power. The draft also would impose a new requirement that the Justice Department report to Congress annually on its use of national security letters, secret requests for the phone, business, and internet records of ordinary people. Ordinary people, you know, as opposed to terrorists. Also, part of the tentative agreement are modest new requirements on roving wiretaps, monitoring devices placed on a single person's genitals, telephones, and other devices to keep a target from evading law enforcement officials by switching phones or computers. God, it's like living in the future. It's like a science fiction movie. All right, I'm going to read this article too, because I like to say the word Putin. Bush, Putin, to try for unity on terror war. So nice that we're getting along with the Russians on something we can both agree on, which is being evil, apparently. I don't get it. Though their political relationship is strained, President and Russian President Vladimir Putin are trying to speak with one voice about the war on terror, the campaign to stop North Korea's nuclear ambitions. The two leaders were to meet Friday, apparently still at odds over how to address Iran's nuclear programs, and with long-running differences over the U.S.-led invasion of Iraq and U.S. concern that Russia is retreating from democracy. Far from home, Bush was on the defensive about Democrats' criticism that he had misled the nation about the need to go to war in Iraq. He said at a news conference Thursday that it was patriotic as heck to disagree with the president. But he added, what bothers me is when people are irresponsibly using their positions and playing politics. That's exactly what is taking place America. Psst, America. What? Huh? In America. Friday's meeting was to be the fifth between Bush and Putin this year, following talks in Moscow, Washington, Bratislava, Slovakia, and Glen Eagles, Scotland. Despite their disputes, they're on a first-name basis and emphasize their friendship, which was strengthened when Putin stepped forward and supported Bush after the terrorist attacks of September 11, 2001. Bush and Putin were to meet in a hotel suite before the opening of the annual Asia-Pacific Economic Cooperation Forum, but then their wives found out. No, just kidding. That's bad. The White House said the key topics would be Iran, North Korea, terrorism, trade, Moscow's goal of joining the World Trade Organization by the end of the year, and developments in Russia. And whatever happened to that cute little lesbian pop duo, Tattoo? They were Russian, right? Bush also was to meet with Southeast Asia leaders to underscore U.S. interests in the region, one of the battlegrounds in the fight against terrorists. Bush planned to ask the leaders to exert their influence on the military junta in Myanmar, which U.S. Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice said was one of the worst regimes in the world. I believe it says right here on this piece of paper, Myanmar is one of the worst regimes in the world. And something about bin Laden planning to attack with planes. But that's not important right now. One of the worst regimes in the world for its record on human rights and free speech. Well, she's probably right about that. Putin has referred to support Bush, has refused to support Putin has refused to support Bush in his eagerness to go to the UN Security Council with suspicions Iran is trying to build a nuclear arsenal. Over U.S. objections, Russia is building a nuclear reactor for a power plant in Iran, an $800 million project the United States fears could be used to help develop nuclear arms like the ones we have. Putin says that he shares the U.S. goal of an Iran without nuclear arms, as well as an Iran without Iranians. But that he has been assured Tehran has no ambitions for developing a nuclear weapon and instead wants its program for civilian energy use alone. Bush and Putin have generally agreed on a need to avert the spread of nuclear weapons technology to other nations, including North Korea, which is insane. Russia is a partner with the United States, China, Japan, and South Korea in talks aimed at persuading North Korea to halt its nuclear program in return for energy and security guarantees and maybe some porn because Kim Jong-il really likes porn. The political relationship between Bush and Putin has frayed, in part because of U.S. concerns that Putin is consolidating power in the Kremlin and eroding democratic advances in post-Soviet Russia. While Russia backed the United States in the war in Afghanistan, Putin vehemently opposed the invasion of Iraq. Putin has been outspoken about the struggle against terrorism, but U.S. officials accuse Russia of turning a blind eye toward what they say is Iranian and Syrian support for terrorists. Russian officials accuse the United States and European nations of maintaining double standards on terrorism and have repeatedly lashed out at them for granting asylum to Chechen rebel figures they consider terrorists. Putin and other officials have suggested some in the West are at least tacitly supporting terrorists in hopes of weakening or dividing Russia. Well, that's some scary shit. If that's what we're doing, that's awful. This coffee is awful, too. It's dreadful. All right, then. Right now, we're just waiting on a call from our good buddy at democracymeansyou.com so we can have a little interviewee. Hopefully the phone is working. In the meantime, let's read another article. Not that one, read that one. Heidi Fleiss. Oh, no, I want to read this one about the crazy mom. All right. Mom makes teen stand on street with sign. If you go to Yahoo News, you can look up this article, and there's a picture of this poor girl standing on the street with a sign. So here it is. Tasha Henderson got tired of her 14-year-old daughter's poor grades, her chronic lateness to class, and her talking back to her teachers. So she decided to teach the girl a lesson. She made Coretha stand at a busy Oklahoma City intersection November 4th with a cardboard sign that said, "I don't do my homework and I act up in school, so my parents are preparing me for my future. Will work for food." Drink that in, people. "This may not work. I'm not a professional," said Henderson, a 34-year-old mother of three, "but I felt I owed it to my child to at least try." In fact, Henderson has seen a turnaround in her daughter's behavior in the past week and a half, but the punishment prompted letters and calls to talk radio from people either praising the woman or blasting her for publicly humiliating her daughter. The parents of that girl need more education than she does if they can't see that the worst scenario in this case is to kill their daughter psychologically, Suzanne Ball said in a letter to the Oklahoman. Marvin Lyle, 52, said in an interview, I don't see anything wrong with it. I see the other extreme where parents don't care what the kids do, and at least she wants to help her kid. Caritha has been getting C's and D's as a freshman at Edmund Memorial High. I bet she's getting beaten up right now. In this well-to-do Oklahoma City suburb, Edmund Memorial is considered one of the top high schools in the state in academics. While Henderson stood next to her daughter at the intersection, a passing motorist called police with a report of psychological abuse, and an Oklahoma City police officer took a report. Mother and daughter were asked to leave after about an hour, and no citation was issued. But the report was forwarded to the State Department of Human Services. There wasn't any criminal act involved that the officer could see that would require any criminal investigation, Master Sergeant Charles Phillips said. DHS may follow up. DHS spokesman Doug Doe would not comment on whether an investigation was open, but suggested such a case would probably not be a high priority. Tasha Henderson said her daughter's attendance has been perfect, and her behavior has been better since the incident. Caritha, a soft-spoken girl, yeah, no shit, acknowledged the punishment was humiliating, but said it got her attention. I won't talk back, she said quietly, hanging her head. She already has been forced by her parents to give up basketball and track because of slipping grades and said she hopes to improve in school so she can play next year. Donald Wortlieb, a professor of child development at the Elliott Pearson Department of Child Development at Tufts University, warned that such punishment could do extreme emotional damage. He said rewarding positive behavior is more effective. The trick is to catch them being good, he said. Sounds like this mother has not had a chance to catch her child being good, or is so upset over seeing her be bad, that's where the focus is. So this is the part where I like to do a little thing called John judges other people, because he can get away with it, because he's on internet radio. This woman is fucking nuts. You cannot force your kid to stand on a street corner with a sign that says, we'll work for food. That should be illegal. That is psychologically abusive to the extreme. The only quote they were able to get out of this kid that was, I won't talk back. That's it. Like, she didn't say, you know, I learned my lesson. I really care about academics. I'm going to go to school. I'm going to, you know, I want to learn. I want to improve my life. I want to help my family. I want to do something with my life. No, she learned not to talk back. So how is it any different than just hitting her? Just hit her. Go ahead. Child abuse is great. This country is fucked up. All right. I just got down off my high horse, and I think I might have sprained an ankle. Fleiss. Plans makeover for Nevada brothel. We're already down to news that doesn't matter. Former Hollywood madam Heidi Fleiss says she's bound for a brothel in the southern Nevada desert that she wants to help remake into a resort featuring male prostitutes serving female customers. Ew. I am moving to Crystal, Fleiss said Wednesday of a desert crossroads 20 miles north of Pahrump and about 80 miles outside Las Vegas. It features two bordellos and little else. I'm opening up a stud farm, Fleiss declared from her Hollywood home overlooking the Sunset Strip. I am going to have the sexiest men on earth. Women are going to love it, especially fat women and old women. Okay, I added that. Joe Richards, who owns the Cherry Patch Ranch and Maybell's Ranch in Crystal, said he sent a courtesy letter Tuesday to inform the Nye County Commission that Fleiss will work for him. She's going to be Madam Hostess of Cherry Patch Ranch, Richards told the Associated Press by telephone. He called her an employee rather than a partner. There's one problem, though. County Sheriff Tony DeMeo said that because Fleiss is a convicted felon, she could be banned from the country's legal sex trade. DeMeo sits with the five county commissioners on a six-member brothel licensing board. Fleiss, 39, and ugly, was released from a California prison in 1999 after serving 21 months for money laundering, tax evasion, and attempted pandering. Fleiss was convicted in 1995 of running a prostitution ring in which models turned prostitutes were flown around the world to meet wealthy actors like Charlie Sheen and clients who paid as much as $10,000 for a single meeting. $10,000. That's nothing. Girlfriend's a lot more expensive. The Mayo said he'd heard several reports in his 3 years as sheriff about Fleiss's plans, including a failed proposal by an Australian firm that hired Fleiss in 2003 to promote a 50-room brothel hotel. That's 50 rooms doing it, people. This is different, Fleiss insisted Wednesday, describing movers packing her belongings and her plan to arrive in Nevada later this week. I'm moving! Nye County is among 10 rural Nevada counties in which prostitution is legal under county and state oversight. Prostitution is illegal in Clark County, surrounding Las Vegas, and Washoe County around Reno. So, if anybody wants to go have sex with the, what is it, the sexiest men on earth, you now know where to go. It ain't here, I tell you. I have a giant open sore on my face. This morning it talked. Well, we're about done here. I have the least important news of the day right in front of me. Oh, wait, no, I totally forgot. It's time for Mom's Emails. I guess we're going to have to talk to Democracy Means You webmaster at the next show. He was unable to call today, but everybody should go to www.democracymeansyou.com and check it out. Like, they have tons of great articles, serious articles, funny articles. I used to write some articles that are still on there. And also, they have, you know, a load of T-shirts and bumper stickers and all sorts of great stuff. It's a site I really support. And I look forward to talking to Ian when he has the time. Let me open up my email here. This is one of my favorite parts of the Kill Radio News. Mom's emails. My mother sends me, between 4 and 80 emails a day expressing her distaste with the president. I get stuff from Common Dreams, from truthout.org, big fan of the Progress Report, Move On, all sorts of just really great sources of information. So let's see what we have here. Just look at the first one from Mom. Mom, radio program stuff. She loves me. This is from the Progress Report from American Progress Action Fund, Progress Through Action. And let's read this article here. That sounds good. This is an article about intelligence and Dick Cheney. Cheney's dishonest and reprehensible charges. Last night, Vice President Dick Cheney said that, quote, the suggestion that's been made by some U.S. senators that the President of the United States or any member of this administration purposely misled the American people on pre-war intelligence is one of the most dishonest and reprehensible charges ever aired in this city. Luke, I am your father. Let's be clear. President Bush and many members of his administration misled the American people on pre-war intelligence. It was either purposeful or the result of gross negligence. These claims were repeatedly advanced to justify the invasion of Iraq. Blaming the people who pointed out is one of the most dishonest and reprehensible charges ever aired by Vice President Cheney. White House senior advisor Dan Bartlett added that the administration's critics have crossed a bright line by claiming that the Bush administration misled Americans into war because they have no facts on their side. Actually, there are mountains of facts to support the claim. Here's a selection of grossly misleading claims made before the war by Cheney himself. Cheney said it was an absolute certainty Iraq was developing nuclear weapons. On September 8, 2002, Cheney said, it is now public that in fact he has been seeking to acquire, and we have been able to intercept and prevent him from acquiring. Hold on a second, we're having a little technical problem. Okay, we're back. Ooh, this is exciting. So this is Cheney, quoting Cheney here. It is now public that, in fact, he has been seeking to acquire, and we have been able to intercept and prevent him from acquiring through this particular channel the kinds of aluminum tubes that are necessary to build a centrifuge. We do know, with absolute certainty, that Saddam Hussein is using his procurement system to acquire the equipment he needs in order to enrich uranium to build a nuclear weapon. End quote. Cheney was referring to the aluminum tubes. At the time, the Department of Energy, the nation's foremost nuclear weapons experts, and the State Department's Bureau of Intelligence and Research did not believe the aluminum tubes were for centrifuges to make nuclear weapons. After the invasion, months of inspections found no evidence of hidden centrifuges or a revived nuclear weapons program. U.S. 0, Saddam 1. Cheney said it was pretty well confirmed that Iraqi intelligence officers met with a 9/11 hijacker. On December 9th, 2001, Vice President Cheney said it was pretty well confirmed that one of the 9/11 hijackers, Mohammed Atta, did go to Prague, and he did meet with a senior official of the Iraqi intelligence services in Czechoslovakia last April, several months before the attack. The CIA has stated publicly that it didn't have any credible information that the meeting took place. The bipartisan 9/11 Commission concluded the meeting did not occur. Even after the 9/11 Commission issued their findings, Cheney refused to back away from his statements. In June 2004, he stated that, "We just don't know whether the meeting took place." Next one. Cheney said that Iraq trained al-Qaeda terrorists. On December 2nd, 2002, Vice President Cheney claimed that Saddam Hussein's regime has had high-level contacts with al-Qaeda going back a decade and has provided training to al-Qaeda terrorists. It wasn't true, and the administration knew it. According to the New York Times, the information came from a detainee identified as a likely fabricator, months before the Bush administration began to use his statements as the foundation for its claims that Iraq trained al-Qaeda members to use biological and chemical weapons. A February 2002 document by the Defense Intelligence Agency said that the detainee, Ibn al-Sheikh al-Libi, was intentionally misleading the debriefers.